Okay, 7 o'clock, and we do have all the task force members here, so I'm going to get us started. Welcome, everyone, to the inaugural meeting of the Champaign County Community Justice Task Force. Any members of the public who want to speak in public participation, the forums are over in the corner like normal. Just bring them up to me by the time we get to item number 5. I guess we will move on to welcome and introductions. I'm Michael Richards. I represent District 6 on the County Board. I'm the Deputy Chair for Justice and Social Services. I'll be chairing this. This falls under Justice and Social Services, and I was happy to be the point person for the County Board to put this together, and I'm certainly hoping that we come up with some things that aid the County Board's process of looking what we need to do with our justice system. I guess let's start over here on my left with Mark and have everybody introduce themselves to board members and to the public. And I guess say what you're bringing to the committee, you think, and say what your goals are on this.
I'm Mark Driscoll. I'm Associate Director with the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Boards. And the board, part of my responsibility is we fund a number of programs throughout the community. Several tie back and serve, folks involved with the criminal justice system, both at the adult and juvenile level.
I'm Scott Bennett, currently with the McLean County State Attorney's Office. I am also on the State Attorney's Representative to the McLean County Drug Court. I am on the Standing Committee as the Junior, I'll be on the Standing Committee for the State Bar Association's Committee for Sentencing and Corrections. I'm interested for many of you to have in this process.
I'm Sheila Ferguson. I am a NAMI representative, a NAMI member for many years, and also the executive director of Community Elements Behavioral Health Organization here in town. So lots of interest in developing and looking at programming in the community that help divert or help people stay out of the criminal justice system.
And my name is Benita Rollins Gay. I am also with Community Elements. I do the crisis line. And so I work with a diverse group of clients. I also work with police officers in crisis intervention training. I'm also a vice president of Urbana School Board. What I bring to the table is the same as everybody else here. It's working with the population that we are working with.
I'm James Kilgore. I'm here representing Citizens with Conviction, which is a locally based group of formerly incarcerated people that advocates for the rights of people with felony convictions. I also work with Champaign and Hass Citizens for Peace and Justice and Education Justice Project. And I have a big interest in alternatives to incarceration.
I'm Julian Rappaport. I'm an emeritus professor in psychology. I've had a fairly lengthy career working with people with serious mental illness, usually outside of institutional settings, often in mutual help organizations. I've worked with diversion programs for juveniles in trouble with the law, so I have some familiarity with the criminal justice system. And my major interest is trying to help think about ways in which we could actually provide useful services to both prevent and also to treat people who have the kinds of difficulties that often get confused with legal difficulties that end up being both a burden on the criminal justice system when they're locked up and a burden on themselves. So I guess my interest is coincident with what the point of this committee is, which is to look for possible alternatives to incarceration.
Professor of law.
Yeah. By the way, everybody, try to use your microphone.
I'm sorry. Lynn Branham, visiting professor of law at
St. Louis University School of Law, but a resident of Champaign. My areas of expertise are correctional and sentencing law and policy, written a lot in that area. I served for 13 years on the Commission on Accreditation for Corrections, so I've been involved in the accreditation of hundreds of prisons and jails, and have done a lot of work with the American Bar Association, focusing on community corrections and restorative justice, and chaired a task force that developed a blueprint for cost-effective corrections and sentencing systems. So in terms of what I hope to accomplish, I hope that collectively we'll make sure that, in a sense, we leave no stone unturned, that we come in with very open minds about the breadth of alternative ways of addressing the issues. I really hope that we look at the pretrial population and pretrial services, and not only alternatives to incarceration, but also look at how we can imbue restorative justice into this criminal justice system. So those are actually some examples of things that I hope. And finally, I do have a wealth of contacts nationally, and so if we end up having an area we want to delve in further, hopefully we can tap into their expertise as well.
I'm William Sullivan. I'm a professor of landscape architecture at the University of Illinois, and my expertise is in designing healthy places, healthy cities. I do research on finding ways to bring out the best in people. And my interest here, I'm also on the advisory board of the Education Justice Project, and I teach regularly at the State of Illinois Penitentiary in Danville, where I also direct the Productive Prison Landscape Program as a way to find ways to engage men in healthy and potentially skill-building activities that that go beyond the typical prison-related education or vocational activities. My interest in contributing here is to think very broadly beyond the narrow notion that we can build architecture to address these problems. I think we need to have a much broader approach.
Great. Everyone's here because I thought you brought something to this commission. We ended up having a pretty great group of applicants, so it was hard to narrow it down, but I think everybody brings something complimentary to this process. I am one vote of the nine here, so you, the task force, will be directing what we do. be thinking about how you want to inform the county board, what you want to talk about, since you will mainly be helping to inform the county board, issuing reports, looking at whatever the task force wants to. There's no reason to really narrow that. The county board can decide to use what you give them or not use, which we don't have much control over, but be thinking about that. Of course, there are specific things that the county we'll be looking at when it's looking at redoing the structures, but this process is going to be driven by you guys. I'm, besides being Justice and Social Services Deputy Chair, basically your liaison for the board, and if we do this productively, we ought to get something that will help the county board decide what to do. Now, all 27 of us on the county board are part-time, and busy people who do other things in the community. That's how we ended up on the county board in the first place, and don't generally have 40 hours a week to think about every subject that goes along. So just bringing issues that they might not have had a chance to think about is going to be very useful for the county board. And then it's basically the county's debating society. They can take that wherever they want. But I think that we can bring some knowledge on the issues to the county to help inform them while they're looking at the various things that they can do with the justice system. Now, this task force will be run on county board rules, like any county board meeting, so we will be using Robert's Rules of Order. So I need a motion for approval of the agenda and a second from the audience. It's also
moved.
Moved by Sullivan, seconded by Kilgore. Are there any amendments or changes to the agenda? Is there any discussion on the agenda? All in favor of the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the same. Agenda passes. We need to determine a regular meeting schedule. Staff has said that the days that this space is open are all Monday evenings and all Wednesdays except the third Wednesday. 6 p.m. would be the best time. I'm assuming since everybody's here at 7 p.m., your evenings are generally free. Feel free to throw out when you would prefer to meet. First Monday, second Monday, third Monday, fourth Monday, everything except the third Wednesday. If we decide we want to start meeting more often than once a month after we get going, we can certainly do so. Is anybody blocked out, not free on some of those dates?
In the fall, Wednesdays, I'm teaching Wednesday night.
Okay.
If I have to, I'd change the teaching schedule, so I want to see what everyone else's schedules
okay.
are. If it doesn't matter to anybody else, Monday's best, but that's just fall.
Mondays would be best for me.
Mondays are best. Mondays are usually the lightest on schedules.
Yeah,
so.
Mondays for me, too.
And I know most of my other meetings are second Monday. So first Mondays, I have nothing.
First Monday is the regular meeting time. Is that agreeable with everybody? Should we do a motion on that?
So moved.
Moved by Sullivan for first Mondays. Their second.
Second.
Second by Ferguson. Is there discussion on that motion? All in favor of Mark?
I just have, what is the, I guess, the term of the past?
The October, the end of October. The establishing document for this had it at the end of October. So currently that's where it sits. Okay. Any other discussion on this motion? All in favor of first Mondays being the regular meeting, say aye. All opposed say the same. Motion passes. So first Mondays at 6 p.m. will be the regular meeting time. We'll move on to item 5, public participation. If anybody came in late, we do have slips over in the corner. If anybody wants to speak in public participation, feel free to bring them up. Okay, public participation is closed. That leaves us for tonight with a couple discussions, and we do have other business if somebody wants to bring something else up. But we might as well discuss the inventory of current programs that we are using here in Champaign County, and then also discuss additional programs that Champaign County could be using. Of course, keep in mind, a lot of these are set by the statutory authority of the state as to what we can use and cannot use. Ms. Busey, can you start by throwing out some of the programs that we're already using? We've heard about adult diversion and restorative justice, and those are both programs that the justice system, to some extent, does utilize in Champaign County.
Actually, I would imagine you have individuals on this council who are better prepared to speak to that. I didn't know you were going to ask me that. I haven't prepared an inventory, but I think a lot of the programs that are available, Mr. Driscoll, some of the people here can probably speak to.
Okay, well, does anybody want to talk about the system as it currently is in Champaign County, Mr. Driscoll?
Well, there are two specific programs that come to mind, mental health court and drug court programs. And then there's also a justice program that the mental health court funds a community office. Of course, there's the crisis program.
Mr. Kilgore.
Could we just have a little bit of elaboration on those programs for people who aren't, say, familiar with what the crisis program is?
Mark, would you like that elaboration of that?
Sure. The mental health court is a fairly new initiative. Judge Ford supervises that. It's a collaborative endeavor with representatives from the state's attorney's office, the judge, community element staff, Ferry Center staff. Ferry Center is a local substance abuse treatment provider. And then there's also the public defender and maybe a few others, Sheila or Anita can add to that. But that's a fairly new program. It's been in operation about 18 months. It has had a slow start, but that's not been unexpected. It is modeled in some respects on the drug court program that's been around for quite some time now. Both programs basically are alternatives to incarceration that folks agree to participate in the program and participate in treatment. Drug court has some specific functions to it in that there's good for drug testing and so forth. Any participant in either of those programs is required to appear before the judge once per week, and then there are team meetings that are held once per week. And the team includes the representatives I mentioned, and they work with the clients throughout the course of their participation in the program. Drug court, in terms of graduation from drug court, it essentially requires a person be compliant with the program and drug-free for a 12-month period. Folks take a little longer than that to graduate. But during that time, they get assistance, not only treatment, but also case management to assist them, job training. If Sheila or Anita have anything else they'd like to ask about it.
Actually, Mark's description is a good one. Mental health court is slowly growing in the number of people that it's able to serve. The programs are voluntary, so the folks who are incarcerated need to be voluntarily choosing the route of treatment. And the treatment is individualized, so we've had a number of other providers involved, including a psychiatrist. Oftentimes, a therapist is involved. And support from the crisis team as needed, because a lot of times folks are not stable on medication. Their symptoms may still be troubling to them. The criminal justice program that Mark referred to is a program that we also have. We call it criminal justice, but what it actually means is a client of ours or someone in the community in Champaign County as a whole who's had any involvement with the criminal justice system, whether it's current or in the past 6 months to 12 months, can be involved in our case management programs, a little more intensive services to sort of curtail recidivism and provide more supports than perhaps other populations may need. Just to reinforce again, more activities of daily living outside the jail, sometimes related to economic situations, benefits, and having medication and things in place, medical card, for example. The other programs that we think would help and certainly do are the ones that interface with the police department, and Benita can talk to it as well, but the crisis team, we've been involved with the community for 40 years, but over the years, we've developed a really close relationship with the police departments, all of them, including the U of I and Parkland, and certainly the Sheriff's Department, and Champaign and Urbana. And through that program, we get involved when there is a situation where someone has indicated a mental health condition exists for the person, whether it's in the community or the person is brought to the emergency department. We're usually called and we'll do the assessments there. Oftentimes, the police department will try to use a crisis intervention trained officer, and we get involved with the CIT training, and that really gives people, or the officers in particular, a really good basis of understanding how to work with folks who are mentally ill or potentially mentally ill or have anxiety disorders or what have you. Maybe even something where they've been involved with a crime or have been victims themselves. And so we get involved in those. And I think that's probably one of the important places to avoid incarceration, because if we can get involved at that stage, often they're coming to the hospital and they're going to come to our respite center or into our treatment programs before being charged with anything. I think probably most of you already know, too, Community Elements operates the Time Center and some programs for people who are homeless with the same intent to try to make sure that there's a place to stay. And we've had a couple of instances over the years where people are, especially men, because that's Time Center's target population, have committed minor crimes and have been arrested for trespassing and things like that. And it's because they don't want to be on the streets. And so we coordinate with the police and with the sheriff to make sure that we can help in those situations. So I think the important part, and maybe the place where we think we could do more work, is, again, that interface between when the police get involved in an incident and before it, you know, charges are made, that there may be some more possibilities there. So that's of interest to us, as well as growing mental health and drug court with Judge Ford's help.
Did you say that there's a mental health court?
Yes.
So there's a drug court and a mental health court.
Yes.
And then you mentioned the CIT, the Crisis Intervention Training. You mentioned the Time Center. Did anything else get mentioned that I missed here?
Yeah, we have a criminal justice program. We have about 35 clients that are not part of the court system but have been involved in the criminal justice system, and so we target specific services around that to help.
Can I get some idea of how many people? Well, I have two questions about the mental health court, the drug court, in particular, I guess. And as I understand what you just said, there were 35 people in the criminal justice program, and they may have been in the criminal justice system at some time. And the crisis program probably has some number. Over, it's been around for a long time, so you probably have some idea how many people utilize it over a course of a year. But the other programs, I have no idea how many people are in those court programs, the drug and the mental health court. And I'm a little unclear about, I understand they're voluntary, but there are probably some conditions on that. And so who's eligible? How do they get in it? How many people are in it, and so on. It would be useful to know that.
I'm not sure what the census is, the number of people who are in drug court today, but I know that there are 8 people in mental health court today. And even though it's voluntary, it has to have agreement from the state's attorney and Judge Ford before you can be in mental health court, for example. And so the team meets weekly, and it's made up of members like Mark talked about, but there's also other providers that are part of the team once someone is in a mental health court, and there may be specialty areas, for example, that we may have additional members for example, like a psychiatrist, or there's a specialty care area, and I'll just say PTSD, or a long-term there may have also been a substance abuse issue, so we will partner with a substance abuse provider. And I can talk just generally about some of the cases. There are some cases that we worked with where we've had to partner with Prairie Center for residential placement, and then the person would transfer from the residential placement to the 24-hour group homes, and where they will receive psychiatric medication if that is in their treatment plan, along with activities of daily living. They may go to NAMI or GROW, and along with PSR programs for education. And so it really depends on the person's individualized situation. Just like drug court has actually been in operation here in Champaign for 12 years. And so they started out small and sort of grew as state's attorney's office and the public defenders and the judges really started looking at how best to meet the needs of people. It's sort of been a careful process to make sure that everybody is in agreement. Sometimes you get a state's attorney who doesn't agree with a particular case going into mental health court, but we're making our way through some of that. Some charges are not have not been approved. For example, somebody who has physically hurt somebody else. There has been more violence. Mostly minor charges have gone through the request for a mental health court. So I think those were kind of your questions about that. The criminal justice program, we can adjust the number of people based on the need. That just happens to be the need, about 35 people right now, mostly Champaign and Urbana, but we have some folks in Rantoul and the surrounding area. And we go out into the community to serve those folks.
Are people excluded from consideration on grounds other than the violent?
There is a list of criteria. I didn't bring them with me, but I can certainly share that with the group.
I can tell you, at least in McLean County, which is modeled the same model, one of the first things we do is whenever people are in the system is we look at and see what their priors are. If they are, if it's violent offenses, typically if it's a domestic battery related charge, DUIs typically aren't considered for it, and also dealers. So if you, for example, the majority of people that are considered are the kind of offenses you would expect from someone who would have a substance abuse issue, retail theft, any kind of theft, burglaries, sustained possession charges, forgeries. But obviously you don't want someone who is a major dealer in the program with people who are probably the most vulnerable to that. So generally those people are not considered for the drug court. And then once all the agencies agree, usually then the drug court votes to see if that person is a good candidate to come in. But it's one of those things, Sheila's exactly right, it is a voluntary program. That being said, typically they're almost out of options at that point. The ideal drug court candidate that we look for in the state attorney's office is someone who, but for a drug court, would go to the Department of Corrections. Maybe he's already been there, but they realize they have a pretty big stick hanging over their head if they don't comply.
Excuse me, could I ask, this is one of the things I wondered.
Sure.
Are the people in it already adjudicated, and this is an alternative they can choose to going to being imprisoned, or are they? Is this prior to adjudication?
Prior to adjudication, they would decide before they plead guilty if they want to take drug court. It's almost an addition. They could either go to probation route if they were to plead guilty. They could go to the Department of Corrections, or they could go the drug court route. The drug court route would be like a very, very intensive probation. It's unfair to even use the two because the requirements as to the daily drug screens and all these other things, it's much more and more intensive. But if they agree to go into that and agree to those additional conditions, then they get this drug court probation, which, as long as they comply with it, keeps them out of the Department of Corrections.
The same is true with mental health court. I just wanted to, there are differences, but mental health court is prior to adjudication, too, and there are some offenses that are not eligible. And sometimes the situation is, even though they're voluntary and maybe everybody agrees, the status in jail is such that there is a great deal of paranoia, so the clients are not mentally able or ready to make those choices. So a lot of times we have to partner also with the jail mental health staff to try to help in the jail so that we can get to a point where people understand the choices before them and the options.
I had a suggestion because I think this has been helpful and illuminating to start to give us some base information, because we can't give recommendations about the future unless we know where we are right now, which I can discern from the way you crafted this agenda. But for me personally, I think it would be helpful, and it might be helpful to the group as well, for these alternatives to reach out to the heads of these different programs and ask for a 1-2 page description. And I was listening to your questions. I have them written down. Give us a brief description of the program, the numbers, the requirements to be in that program, anything that leads to exclusion, the duration, if there's a maximum time period. And at some point, we're going to want to find out, now this might be in person with the heads, talking to them, we're going to want to know about potential for expansion. I don't know if that we want that in writing at this point, but at a minimum, we want a description. And then at some point we will want to assess, in my opinion, the potential for or looking to see whether any of those programs are underutilized. So those we've heard about, plus the different probation programs. I know we have, just from the readings, we have electronic detention and anything else. So I don't know the structure for reaching out and requesting this. But then plus we'd all kind of have this common base of information and decide what more we want. So I've mentioned some questions, again, kind of, but there might be some additional information that you identify if you concur that that would be helpful.
We could certainly ask for that. We have Bill and James with their hands up. Bill.
Are the folks that are in the adjudication process that we've been talking about here destined for the Illinois Department of Corrections or the county jail or both, depending on the charge?
Assume we're talking all county, right? Yeah.
It's what? So it's not, no, the people in drug court, for instance, would not end up in Department of Corrections. They'd just end up in a county jail?
What usually happens is that during the time they're on drug court, and this is what they talked about, I believe Mark talked about it, where you come before, the great thing about drug court, honestly, is the immediacy of your issues. If you have a what we call jury drop, you have a positive screen during that week, it isn't a court date in 6 weeks that you hear. It's that week when you come in, Judge Ford calls you up and gives you a sanction right then. You get some more jail time, you get whatever. It might not just be jail time. It might be you have to start, you know, coming in every morning at 8 o'clock and doing breathalyzer, whatever it would be. But you get a sanction right away. After a certain number of sanctions, the state attorney's office can file a petition to revoke your probation, just like they could on any probation sentence. And then, usually, the state's asking for the judge to revoke the probation term and send that person to the Department of Corrections. So that is that kind of, the heavy weight that hangs over the drug court client is knowing that if they make too many mistakes, and you expect, the one difference between probation, regular probation, and drug court probation, is you expect them to make mistakes. You don't expect them on day one to be clean. And they recognize it's a much more involved process than that. But you expect it to taper off. And after you've been in several months, you expect the conduct to be different. And if it doesn't change, if there's still problems at a certain point, the state attorney's office can revoke that probation, and then Department of Corrections time can be issued by the judge. But the idea is they would never go to DOC at that point. They would just do whatever small jail time they might have. They might do a few sanctions. But if they comply with the program, they'll be released without any additional jail time.
James.
Yeah, I'd like to support Lynn's suggestion, but and also maybe to add some information. I think her proposal raises some questions in terms of the how the task force, you know, operates and how we actually access information. I presume we can't just snap our fingers and get stacks of information. So, I mean, what sort of authority do we have? What kind of resources do we have? I mean, if we're going to get a list of all the programs in a one- or two-page summary, I mean, who's going to get that done? How is that going to happen? Do you have
any? Well, that is correct. We do not have subpoena power. We've seen this some on the Justice and Social Services Committee on the County Board. We can request any of these program directors come in. They may or may not choose to, and their bosses may or may not choose to let them. I think that we can probably get, whether from them or simply from, say, the county budget, some of the specifics on these programs. And I think that these are generally run either through the state's attorney's office or largely through the court system. And I think that, well, to an extent that they will be willing to help on this and want to help out. I've found the sheriff's office, the court system here in Champaign County, and the state's attorney's office fairly supportive and fairly interested in making sure that the county board knows what program they have. They want to take credit for what they're already doing. They don't want people in here at the county board meetings complaining about them not doing things that they're doing. So I think that I and the county staff will be able to reach out and get you some specifics on this. We certainly will have the budget data. This is all not necessarily a report from them, but the specifics on this are all public information. These are public programs, and so I think that we should be able to get a handle on what we're doing, and I think that these agencies will be quite happy to help explain that. Now everybody's busy. I don't know if they're going to be able to make time on Monday evenings to come by or how extensive a description of what they do they're going to be able to get us, but I think that they're going to be able to, and they're going to be willing to help us out on that. Sheila?
Community Elements programs are crisis, mental health court. We're involved in the drug court and the criminal justice grant, so we can do all of those. So.
Mark? Okay. Mr. Rappaport.
Can we get I'm not sure where, some information about the nature of the mental health services that are provided to people who are incarcerated? But reading the sheriff's reports, it sounded pretty startling to me, both the numbers and what seemed like, I guess wouldn't it be fair to say the sheriff seemed to feel like he was beside himself with the lack of services. So maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah.
But can we get a handle on what actually happens with people once they're incarcerated in terms of mental health services?
Well, I can certainly work at, and the county can certainly work with the sheriff to try to get that. The document you saw from the sheriff was for a specific need, specifically for that study session on the jail. I will say one of the reasons that we have the current composition of this task force is one of our main issues is that we have a jail system just like everyone in the state of Illinois. I can't speak outside of Illinois, but we have a jail system that more and more has become a mental health facility. There are constant problems, as probably with most jails, at our jails, both because they were not built to be that, and just from the level of people there, we have two people who deal with inmate mental health issues pretty much full time in the sheriff's department at the jails, and every year or two we despite doing everything that they could think of, there are suicides. We have people with all sorts of, and of course, a lot of the people at the county's jails are there either, they're there pre-trial, they're there fairly short term, they're there short sentences for drugs, traffic, and a lot of it is, we have a lot of people coming through our system who are there pre-trial for a few days, and they may have something in their system, and the state has a huge backlog in getting people into its mental health system, and therefore we always have inmates that basically shouldn't be in our facilities as they currently are, but we have no choice but to house them, and they're there. We have to do the best we have with it. So one of the things that we need to look at is what we can best do with inmates with substance abuse problems and mental health problems who are in our jails. And of course, that when they walk in, they don't necessarily raise their hand and say, I have these problems that may be coming up. And so that's one of the, that's as you saw in there, the sheriff is saying things need to change on that. And no matter what the county board decides to do, the three main options on its facilities are do nothing, rehab the downtown jail, or build onto the satellite jail. We can certainly be doing a better job dealing with this, because I don't, especially with the state's budget cuts, I don't think that we can expect that the state is going to get better in the next several years on this issue. So we as a county need to figure out how we're going to deal with it. And we really don't have any extra money to deal with it. We really don't have any extra money for anything. Any new facilities that might be built are years down the road. And so one of our big challenges here is how basically do we best become a mental health facility? So that's definitely something to look at. We, between the county's two facilities, the satellite jail can house up to 182 people. Downtown can house up to 131. And generally at any one time, we've got about 50 people on electronic home detention. And the court system, Judge DeFontis and Sheriff Walsh, tell me they would love to do more. It would save the county money. It would save the county possible overcrowding. But the problem is, on something like electronic home detention, and on a lot of people in there, we have everything is by state sentencing guidelines. Now, they're mandatory minimums, and we have a court case from, I think, last year on electronic home detention, which is really constricting what the county can do on that. So a lot of the things that we would like to do would require a legislative remedy. But we can certainly look at the programs that we are using with the county and figure out what state and federal grants and programs that we are not utilizing that we can try to do. James?
Two things. I mean, one is that, I mean, there are other kind of preventative programs. I mean, most of what we're dealing with is dealing with people after they become engaged with the criminal justice system. But, I mean, for example, under the public safety sales tax, there's 5% allocated to youth education. Some of that goes to the boys clubs and so forth. But I think if we're going to look at this, we should also look at programs that deal kind of at a preventative level before people are engaged with the criminal justice system. And, I mean, I would think, I don't know about the mental health sphere, but I think there are some church programs, there's youth education. And secondly, I haven't heard anything about reentry programs. And I know that there's a crying lack of those in this county, so it might be worthwhile to also kind of inventory those. There are some churches that run those kinds of programs, but that's also a big factor in terms of trying to reduce the number of people that are in jail. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, those aren't things we can necessarily order a list of from, you know, from the resources of the county. So, I mean, I don't know if we want to take up some of those or...
Well, we can hopefully get an inventory of what the county is doing and then deduce from that what the county is not doing. We do have 5% of the public safety sales tax going into crime prevention, especially working with the youth. And as far as I know, that's a universally popular program. Of course, something we could look at is how successful is it? Should it be expanded? But, of course, there's not really money for things like that.
So would it be possible at our next meeting to have a list of items that Lynn has requested with the categories that she identified, and a second set of items that describe the programs, or the description of the program, and the number of people participating once someone's already incarcerated? So what do we What are we doing once somebody's in the system, already incarcerated in the system, and in an effort to try and make sure they don't come back? So there's the reentry things, there's the mental health stuff that's happening while they're incarcerated. There might be there may be substance abuse programs that occur or for folks in the county jail, for instance. That certainly happens in the Illinois Department of Corrections. So can we? It'd be nice to have those two categories. Here's the stuff that happens when people are on the outside before they get involved in the system that we do, and then here's the stuff once the folks are in the system that we're trying to do, so that we can have a, so then we can look at the landscape of all this, and we can say, okay, here's what's going on here, the overlaps. Ooh, look at the hole here.
And I have a suggestion, again, just the way I kind of think and operate, again, get that base information, but then, to me, then we would be looking at how can then we go delve deeper, because a well-working criminal justice system is integrated. So there are integrations between, as we said, it's not even just reentry. It's almost seamless. So, and that will come, I believe, through questioning certain people. And so if people come and we have them scheduled, 20 minutes, somebody from probation, and we'd have to figure out who that is. And we just have, and how, whether we're going to just have a long night and do as much as we can, because then all of a sudden we're just going to start seeing a lot of, I believe, unrealized potential to make things work better, and we'll see where the gaps are. But I do think that written information gets us started.
Okay.
I would agree with that, and one of the things I was going to suggest is I think it'd be good to know not just a list of what we have, but see with our eyes. So if there's at some point we could schedule some kind of a jail tour, both of satellite and downtown, to know what facilities there are. I completely agree with Lynn with that the stakeholders, I think, have to be, we have to be able to ask them certain questions. I don't want to waste their time. That's why I think some certain questions can be answered with just a list of what programs there are. And I think, I think the sheriff would be good to talk to if he'd be willing to come in, state's attorney, the public defender, someone from court services. But I think that would be best after we've had a chance to see what facilities are there, and then we can actually ask him, kind of informed questions about that.
Julia.
Sheila, you may know the answer to this. I'm not sure. What I'm wondering is if there's any, do we have any, does the jail system or the criminal justice system have any formal relationships with places like Provena, where someone who needs inpatient, someone in acute psychotic episode can be taken care of? Maybe some of the, I guess when I was, I'll just comment on this, when I was reading the sheriff's description again, I'm thinking some of these folks really are, they're just in the wrong place. So have we developed any such relationships?
There are relationships.
Way?
And they do, if somebody is acutely suicidal, they can move them into a hospitalization at Provena. We've had a couple of cases like that. The sad truth is the state-operated facilities, for example, if somebody was found NGRI, they may sit in our jail here for 60 to 120 days waiting for a bed in a treatment facility like McFarland or used to be Zeller, which is really, really unfortunate because they go untreated. There's lots of other issues that the sheriff deals with that we try to help with. For example, the formulary that they use in the jail is a limited formulary. It's far limited in the sense of atypicals. They still use Haldol and Prolixin, which we don't use anymore. It's a cost-related issue, but again, we see if it's a client of ours, and this is where we try to triangulate the relationships, it's sort of scares me when I see these reports because I always think if it was somebody that was involved with us and had our physician, we actually could bring medications to the jail, and we do. If they go into the jail and aren't treated with or don't have a psychiatrist outside the jail, then the medications are limited to the formulary that's at the jail. So for somebody who could be ready to go into mental health court, they may have to wait longer. And, I'm just going to go back. I know Scott was talking about visiting the jails. I know some of us have been to all two, but I totally agree that we should go see them, because what programs you can bring to the jail are limited. There's not enough space to actually run very many groups or educational opportunities at the downtown jail. The satellite jail is more conducive to educational groups and some of what you guys have been talking about. So there's some limitations that probably would be really helpful to see.
So is it possible to, I'm probably getting way ahead of where we are ready to be, but I'm wondering if it's possible to think about alternative secure locations like a locked unit at Provena, for example, that would be able to take some of these clients who would be better served in that context.
Well, the other problem is not a lot of these clients have payer sources that would cover the cost of their care.
That brings up another question. Does anyone have any idea how the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act might impact these issues? Because I think mental health is a significant part of Obamacare, and if it survives the Supreme Court, to the extent that a large number of the people who are engaged in the county system here have mental health issues, there might be a vehicle by which the county can secure real treatment for people's real needs in a fashion that's paid for more generally by federal dollars. And I don't know the answer to that. Does anybody know the answer to that?
I think that it's optimistic to think that that will happen without eligibility and utilization management timelines. For example, even though they increased some of the benefits recently for Medicaid patients, they've also limited, for example, 10 sessions that's allowed for certain diagnoses. 10 days in the hospital for a Medicaid recipient before reauthorization. And so you see shorter hospital stays because the state isn't approving longer ones. And so people aren't really stabilized. But I think just kind of going back to trying to get an inventory of what we have, I think is really helpful, and maybe putting it along a continuum so you could see. Because I do think there's lots of potential for us to have impact and for the county and for different levels, whether it's state's attorney or to know what those options are. We are a complex system, and I think one of the things I've learned in my last 15 years is that people say, oh, I didn't know you had that program. And NAMI, the other thing is that they do some advocacy work too, and so if you don't know what the programs are, you can't make the referrals you need to, and you can't access them. And it's true for any one of our professions, whether it's the police officer who's in the field who says, oh, my goodness, this person really just needs to be in the hospital. I think we're going to have to arrest him because now he's agitated. And so training some officers, maybe looking at some alternatives, but map them onto a continuum and take a look at what we have. And like we've talked about, look at the gaps. But make sure that everybody has the same resource or has the same tools so they know. Because I do think, you know, we can make a big difference here.
I'm really appreciating what you're saying. I have one more question, at least at the moment, which I think I want to address to the lawyers. There's at least two. Maybe more, I don't know. Once people are adjudicated and have mental health needs, is there any sort of legal requirement that those needs be met in some by some standard? So
unless you want to, Scott. Okay. It violates the Eighth Amendment when governmental officials are deliberately indifferent to the serious medical needs of inmates, and that would include pretrial detainees. It's the Eighth Amendment. We say it's due process, but that's the standard. So it violates the Constitution when there is deliberate indifference, and that includes mental health needs. There's a recognition that there can be the same pain and suffering when those needs are unaddressed as when physical needs are. So yes, talking about I'm addressing the Constitution and not other sources of rights, because there may be other sources of rights as well, and also just basic humanitarian considerations. Can I raise a question? Do you have a point following from that?
It's just useful to me to know that there is some really a not just moral, but in fact legal reasoning that would be involved in the need to provide adequate care for people
absolutely.
who lost their freedom.
Right. I think the only other issue is that people have a right to refuse medication and treatment. And so in many cases, that's what you're seeing when you look at this particular list, because there are providers that will provide care. There's a psychiatrist that's there, and also our psychiatrists are available. So the minute that somebody is willing to do that, that's available to them. So they don't want to leave people thinking that there are people at the jail that wouldn't get services if they were willing.
Well, that would be an interesting, I think that's something we ought to pursue a little bit, because it would be interesting to address how to facilitate the acceptance of those services. I mean, I don't know at the moment, why are so many people turning them down? Maybe the services are terrible. Maybe they should be turned down. I mean, maybe they're not. Maybe they're just people are paranoid and don't want to be bothered. But it would be at least interesting to address that question.
One question I have is, because I understand we're following Robert rules, which I'm pretty informal, so I'll probably need guidance throughout our meetings. But I didn't know if we needed a formal motion, but if we did, I can make it about the inventory. But before doing so, this is because I'm more informal. I did want to know if we want, again, I think a shorter description is better for our purposes now, because if we get, I mean, literally everybody could send us and something punchy, because at some point we're going to be using this to help educate the public too. But we do have this question of, at some point we want to find out, is there unrealized potential there? Are you underutilized in your opinion? Now, we can ask that verbally, or we can ask for right now a very crisp assessment. That would be another page. We want it, in my opinion, sure. They can always give us more stuff, but again, I think, so that's kind of a question before, if you need a motion, I can get something on the table, and then we could get some amendments.
I don't think we need a motion on that. We are using Robert's rules, but I will be happy, and we'll be happy to pass that along, pass that request along.
What have we got? And we want to find out their assessment. Is there unrealized potential? And then we'll dig deeper. But that really, I think that will help us.
James.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think we need that base information, and then perhaps when we have that information, we'd be in a better position to decide who we might want to come and interrogate, and what are some of the questions we want to ask.
Yeah, and
I'm still a little wanting in terms of the programs that aren't under the, you know, that aren't necessarily under the county's aegis, because I think these are a big part if we're going to have preventative, you know, programs that keep people from ever getting involved in the criminal justice system. We need to know what those are, and also to be able to look at the untapped potential for those programs. And I'm not exactly sure how we're going to get that information, you know, beyond the Boys Club, which is in the public safety sales tax.
So you're talking private, non-profit social services programming?
That sort of thing. I mean, let me give an example. Say the Catholic Worker House, right? It deals with homeless people. There's a couple of churches that have reentry programs, but they're not drawing funding from the county, so they're going to be off the radar. But those are important services. If we're going to do an inventory, we need to have some kind of listing of those as well, which are going to be a little bit harder to get our hands on.
And on this inventory, I think it would be good if everybody who had questions or specifics that you wanted to be passed on to these agencies, email me that tonight or tomorrow. I'm trying to write everything down, but let me know what you want to know, and I will try to pass that on. Like I said, it's a little dicey with nonprofits, but certainly with county services, these are public bodies and public programs, and so to a certain extent, this is information that shouldn't be a problem to get, Ms. Busey.
I think to that point, too, there are a lot of services and programs that come into the jail that are not publicly funded, and we'll certainly be able to get information about all of those that might be along the lines of what you're talking about.
I think I'm willing to bring some of this information that I have, and maybe if other people could suggest other, you know, other organizations that are involved in this kind of work, so that we could get and so that we could get as complete a listing as possible. I mean, obviously, I would appreciate it. It would be wonderful if if the county could chase these down. But I mean, I think it's probably a little unrealistic to expect that that's going to happen. I don't know.
And part of this does need to be everybody needs to make sure to inform the rest of the group about the little piece of the justice system that they are already working with. So certainly any outside agencies you're working with or anybody else is working with, that it would be great if you would bring that kind of inventory to the task force. Okay, any other discussion on item 6? Okay. I think we've pretty much covered item 7, discussing additional programs in our discussion on item 6. But does anybody have any more explicit discussion they want on programs that we need to be looking at doing? Scott.
Just a little bit from my background here. I was with the State Attorney's Office in Bloomington until about 2007. When I left, the jail was ridiculously overcrowded. They were sending people to 3 or 4 different jails and spending almost $1 million to house people outside the jails. I was here in private practice for a few years. When I came back just last year, suddenly there was no overcrowding issue. They weren't sending anybody anywhere anymore. And so I started asking a lot of people, what has changed through that? And one of the things that changed was the county implemented a system of pretrial services, which they talk about vaguely in what we have here, but every county does it a little bit differently. They have a director in McLean County who is currently working with a lot of other counties trying to set things up. And I've been very impressed with the system they use, and I've talked to him about possibly doing some kind of presentation for our board if you guys are interested in that. But what they're basically doing is we have two people who now, instead of working, for example, my understanding is the electronic home monitoring that we have currently is run through the sheriff's office. This pretrial service is actually run through probation, which is so it makes it a little bit more neutral. It makes it more of an informational gathering than anything else. And what they do is there's two people in their office, and what they do is they see who's in custody that day. It's the day they get, they're arrested, they work to write reports. They interview them down to jail, write reports, get that in front of the judge. So the judge has additional information when deciding on what kind of bond are we setting. Because one thing we could probably do rather quickly is that, obviously, you can't do anything about the, and even prosecutors agree, ridiculous mandatory sentences for traffic offenses. I told people, as a defense lawyer and as a prosecutor, you can get less time stabbing someone than you can for driving on a suspended license in certain situations. There's nothing we can really do about that on a county level. But what we can do is that period from the time they're arrested until the time they plead guilty, if they're not a danger to the community, if they're not a flight risk, what can we do to make sure that they're out, now the county's not paying to incarcerate them, but that they're going to be coming back. And so this is one thing that I was really interested in. I met with him on two different occasions. The director over there, he was had worked in Kankakee, which is another very good pretrial services in the community. And this has some very interesting ideas of what they do. It isn't just monitoring, though they certainly do that too. There's three different levels of monitoring with GPS or with alcohol, what's called scram bracelets, to just having them come in every week as if they were on probation after they were convicted. But some really interesting ideas what they've done through pretrial services over there in other counties. And so some of them may actually be done and called something else. And so I want to kind of wait until we see, as Lynn suggested, what we have available now. But was very interested to see what they've done. And they talked about, in the last 5 years, they've had about 600 inmates. And, the reason I compare Bloomington, it's the same size community, almost exact same size jail, same size state attorney's office, for example. And what they've done is they've taken about 600 people in the 5 years and taken them out of the justice system, or out of daily incarceration until the time of conviction. They have about an 87% success rate in terms of people showing up for court just like they would otherwise and not committing new offenses and going on that way. But a huge savings to the county, and I think also is better for those people who aren't incarcerated at the time and can work and do other things, which are good for their families. So that's, you hear a lot about pretrial services, but to explain something, this huge umbrella of what it does, I think it might be an advantage to actually bring someone in to talk about what they do as a practical matter.
I had several ideas, and that was going to be the first one. That if I could identify one of the most conspicuous gaps in this county, it is the lack of pretrial services. It's kind of like having a school system and not having first grade. And I wanted to tell you, I took a group of officials from a county a number of years ago up to see what at the time was a model pretrial services program in Milwaukee. I can't tell you now if it's still a stellar program, but it works very effectively with the mentally ill. It was specifically designed for that population, and it's structured in a way where the mentally ill people who would otherwise be pretrial detainees come. They get their meds. They get a stipend for food and so on and so forth. People who were not real familiar with this option came away just extremely impressed with it. So I agree that that's something we should put on the list. And we got grant money. I contacted somebody from NIC. Obviously, there's not as much money these days to pay for individuals to go out and visit that. GPS monitoring, not just for pretrial services, but for the sentence population. Day reporting center possibility. Another thing that I assume, does anybody know if we have day fines in this community? A lot of people don't like to talk about that. They're used very effectively in Europe as an alternative to incarceration, considered punitive. And has had dramatic impact on decreasing incarceration. My premise is always, I think a lot of times when people are looking about community sanctions, they always want a lot of supervision. Well, even community supervision is expensive, and we need to always look and say, do we really need to do that? Is it cost-effective? And if somebody wants to hit me, quite frankly, hit me in the pocketbook, because I've got a child in college and another one about to go to college. But these work for low-income individuals, so that's something I'd suggest. Restorative justice work programs, I've been doing a lot of writing on that. It actually dovetails with what you're doing, I'd like to talk about. We have, it sounds like, drug courts, beginning mental health courts, but problem-solving courts in general, approaching the process differently, because right now we say, well, for the mentally ill, we're going to look at them holistically, for the drug offenders, but the reality is most of the people in the system, they have these kind of special needs, so taking problem, now we call them problem-solving courts. So I guess I'm saying that I've got the list goes on and on. I do hope that we look at the planning structure long term for the county and criminal justice, because we've got this group. But really, if to have community sanctions work effectively, jurisdictions have basically planning boards, planning councils, something like that. They aren't ad hoc. They're broad-based. We can talk about this. It's in the Model Community Corrections Act. You get key stakeholders, members of the public, and it's a dynamic process, and it's ongoing. But it's not a life sentence. You know, it would be for finite terms. But I hope that will be part of our recommendations about a permanent structure, because otherwise what I see is you make a little progress and you slip back, but you really want that structure in place if we're going to talk about a more progressive and cost-effective and humane paradigm for the county.
Great. Does anybody else have anything on other programs you'd like to look at? Bill?
I have to apologize. I made a commitment to the babysitter to be home at about 8:15, and I'm going to keep that commitment to her. Just close poorly by saying I'm looking forward to participating and to working with all of you.
Great. Anything else on item 7? We'll close that out then. Other business? Does anybody else have anything else that you want to bring up tonight? We can stay at 7. We can.
Yeah. To follow up on what Lynn was saying, to look at the, to look a little bit more holistically, I think it would also be useful for us to look at some of the counties that have faced situations where an impending jail construction project was being considered, and where they did kind of a study of the overall criminal justice system, looking for a range of measures which would enable them to focus on alternatives rather than construction. Los Angeles County being the most recent example of this, where a report commissioned by the ACLU actually reversed their plan to spend $1.4 billion on a jail and went in the direction of alternatives. But there's a number of other counties that have done similar things in New Orleans, in Suffolk County in New York, in Winnebago County in Wisconsin. I mean, there's a whole range of counties where kind of a broader study has prompted enough of a reversal of the trends of incarceration to, you know, to warrant a rethink on a major construction project. So I think looking at some of these more holistic studies that have been done would also be very useful for us at some point.
Okay. Julian, did you have something to say?
Comment on that. I think it's what I was going to do is reinforce Lynn's thought about a planning. I'm not sure what the right title of it is. A planning board that, in relationship to contemplating the possibility of doing construction of a new jail or remodeling or whatever exactly is settled on, it would be, I think, advisable to do that, to only do that in conjunction with such a planning board, so that if there is a need for new physical facilities or changed physical facilities, they somehow fit with an overall plan for the criminal justice system in the county. And so I guess what I'm heading toward here is thinking it would be, I have no idea what the timeline for these things are, but I would hope that there's a way that we could signal that, and I don't know how controversial it would be for us to have this point of view put out there, but the idea that moving ahead, regardless of what ends up being decided about physical facilities, without having some sort of planning board that considers the entire system so that that's a part of the plan, is only going to lead us back to where we are now in some unknown number of years, where the facility will be inadequate because it will not have been, we will not have taken into consideration enough things about the criminal justice system. So, and I'm wondering if we can begin, I guess, toward taking a position of that sort. So I'm.
Well, that's great, because that's what the county board wants you to do as we look at what we want to do with the facilities. Is there anything else on additional programming?
Can you talk about that a little bit more? Because there's another group, right, looking at facilities. So
yeah.
How do the two of us kind of...
If we're, yeah, I'll be happy. I have some things to talk about in other business. Is everybody done talking about programming? Okay. Well, then we'll move on to other business, and let's talk about some of the things going on with the pressing matters with the county. Right now, the county has put out a request for proposal on a needs assessment, basically for the criminal justice system, especially the structures, but for the criminal justice system, for the jails and what goes on in them in Champaign County. That is due May 25th. I heard a reference to the jail project planning team, which is going to be reviewing this needs assessment and then making a short list and giving it to the county board. The short list, but the project planning team is going to be meeting on June 16th and reviewing the RFPs and announcing a short list on June 20th. And the county board is going to be reviewing the RFPs, the firms who've made requests for proposals, on June 26th at 6 p.m. And at some point after that, the county will presumably accept a request for proposal and will then move forward with getting a needs assessment. And when we get that needs assessment, that ought to help guide us as well with the county, looking at some further steps on that. Can you, James?
Well, I think maybe I don't know if everyone is aware of the sort of power the power relations of us, between us and the planning committee, but sorry, the planning team. But I don't think that the needs assessment is particularly going to inform us, and we don't really have any way of directly inputting into the planning team's decision. They have the final authority at the moment, and that has been somewhat. I mean, that's been discussed quite at length within the board meetings.
Yeah.
Thinking that, I mean, part of what we have to decide is how we're able to engage with the planning team more effectively as we move forward. It's an important part of our function, because we don't want to simply gather data and make a report that's, you know, that doesn't really get the kind of attention that it warrants.
Yeah. Well, the county board is the final authority on picking a contract for the RFP to go forward with the needs assessment. Any other business or any other comments on the RFP schedule or project planning team? Julian?
I wasn't completely clear from what you said about the nature of this RFP. Is that concerned with an RFP for the physical environment, or is it broader than that?
It is broader than that. It's going to be looking at the overall operations of the jail system and the justice system. And basically, we have put out a request for proposal for a contract to work with the county and do a needs assessment to basically look at our needs and make some suggestions to where the county should go. Ms. Busey?
The RFP anticipates that the consultant who ends up being hired to do this needs assessment will meet with this group during the process of developing their recommendations. So I think there's been somewhat of a public misperception created about the jail project planning team just happens to be staff up to this point. A jail project planning team at different points throughout a process will include a group like this or representatives from the public or, you know, so I think it's not quite as separated as you may have seen it portrayed. I expect everyone will be working together over the next several months on this. And certainly what you're talking about gathering is only going to be helpful to a consultant once on board if we've already done some of that, you know, establishing the facts about what is available.
James?
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that we will deliver a report to the planning team. I mean, I don't think there's any process in place for us to actually join the planning team. Am I wrong on that? Because, I mean, that's what I was hearing you say, is that we're going to at some point join with the planning.
You know, based on your conversation tonight, I think at different points you're going to want to meet with the sheriff. Well, he's a member of the planning team. You're probably going to want to hear from the judiciary about some of these ideas and concerns. Well, that's a representative of the planning team. And quite frankly, your report is not delivered to the planning team. Your report will be delivered to the county board. So I really believe over time that the planning team and this group are going to be working together. It just makes sense.
Yeah, the resolution establishing this task force has us reporting to the county board, but the planning team will, at least on paper, will be narrowing down RFPs to a short list. On the 26th, the county board can pick whoever it wants, but presumably we'll at least start off by looking at the short list. If somebody else brings something else that didn't make the short list, there's nothing stopping the county board from picking that. At that point, we are here on the ground. You all have certain knowledge in this. Like Ms. Busey was saying, we will hopefully be working with the consultant doing the needs assessment. And then when the needs assessment is finished later in the summer or fall, that will help the county board. And this task force also has an opportunity to do reports or hearings on its own to give to the county board going forward.
I'm actually, again, this is an ideal. Ideally, we have the broad-based group I just mentioned, prosecutor, et cetera, member, as one, and then subcommittees, some looking at the architectural. I mean, there are just some real safety issues at the jail. But this can work, but we will, in my opinion, can have a profound impact on what happens with the jail, because we really have to provide input. Are all the people that are there now, do they need to be in there? Are there better ways to handle them? And that will affect what they do with the jail. So I think it suggests that we've got a lot of exciting things to do, and we can really play a meaningful role in this. And we can also, again, the dialogue with the consultant will be very important. And I think we have the prerogative at some point to say we really need to at some point meet, and I don't think we're close there, with the other committee. And in the same room, and even just sit down and talk to them. And not, I don't think we're there yet, but and you may decide it's ill-advised. But I guess the bottom line is we could sit there and say, they're going to have a consultant. Do they really need us? I think we're going to have a profound impact if we want to on this county. I hope so.
James.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think there's a lot of potential, and part of what we have to figure out is not only gathering information, but figure out how we can maximize our impact, which will have quite a serious discussion.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other business, other comments on the planning team, the RFP for the needs assessment? Okay. Our next meeting date, it looks to me like is going to be the 4th of June at 6 p.m. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but that looks like the first Monday. And is there a motion to adjourn? Moved by Rappaport, seconded by Ferguson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.